On behalf of the Professional Baseball Strength and Conditioning Coaches Society, I'd like to welcome you to the PBSCCS podcast. I'm your host, Chris Messina. Hi everybody, before we get into this episode, I just wanted to give a quick disclaimer. At the time of recording, which was back in January, I believe, John was the rehab guy with the Texas Rangers. And up until recently, he was still in that position. I just talked to him the other day and he told me that he has since moved on to a military position. So it won't affect any of the information in this episode, but just wanted to give you guys a heads up before we got going. With that being said, let's get into part two with John and Ben.
So we hit on upper body training, lower body training. How about throwing progressions for guys?
So for us on our end, I don't know about you, John. Ours are usually dictated through either the rehab protocol or from the rehab team. So other than maybe having an opinion watching a guy, I used to not have too much of a influence there.
Yeah, for us, ours is completely dictated by the medical side, which honestly a lot of it comes down from the protocol depending on what sort of repair they had going on or what sort of surgery they had. A lot of that now is actually, a lot of it is, it's coming right from the surgeon. I don't have much of a role in there besides, you know, using my eyes to see like how guys are, how they look while they're throwing. And then I sort of relay information to our pitching coaches. You know, like if somebody's not using their legs at all, like that's something that, you know, needs to be addressed. And the more eyes, the better in that scenario. Just things like that. Like I try to help when I can, but by and large, like that comes from the medical side. And then anything I see, I try to help the pitching coaches with it, because there's a lot of guys who throw at once. So, and they only got two eyes themselves. So, and then I let them deem if that needs to be addressed or not.
Something with this throwing, again, I remember from this past spring training, one of the guys in the rehab group, like I said, I would go over there all the time and just kind of hang out with those guys. One of the kids had his first bullpen session after Tommy John. And it was like, the whole rehab group stopped training and like went out to watch him and like cheer him on and like, you know, give him encouragement. And you could kind of see he was a little hesitant just because it was the first time on the mound. You know, everybody's probably a little gun shy at that point, but just the excitement and the energy, again, going back to the environment, like it was really cool to see that and see them rally around the kid. And, you know, he got through it and he felt fine and everybody's high-fiving him and, you know, slapping him on the back and the coaches are all cheering for him. So it was really cool to see that. And I don't know how much you guys like actually get to see them throw because of all the other rehab that you're interacting with. But for me, that was really, really cool to see.
Yeah,
that's something that, rehab team,
sorry.
My bad. Go ahead, Ben.
I was just going to say the rehab team almost literally becomes an unofficial extra team with the org that kind of rallies around each other. And it's funny because you'll have, you know, young Latin guys with first round picks, with older org guys, with big leaguers, and it just becomes this very interesting mix of players. But they, like Chris said, rally around each other. Guy hits a milestone, you know, the guy has a first game back after a long time, they'll all go watch the game. Like guy has his first bullpen, they'll go out watch it together. Like the more they can rally around each other, like the more it keeps things fun for the environment, for everybody around.
Yeah, for sure. Like it's crazy how tight knit these groups get, because these guys, they see the setbacks, they see when guys are doing well, you know, the players, they see everything, they talk about it to each other. Like they get really close to each other and, you know, they go out and they'll watch each other's bullpens. Like it's a family, really. I mean, we have guys, say, for example, this year we had a couple of guys who were pitching out in Scottsdale, and we had, I want to say like five or six guys who drove all the way out to Scottsdale, which, you know, at 5 o'clock in the afternoon, I mean, that's like an hour and a half drive sometimes. and they just drove out there just to watch these guys. They only threw two innings. It's not like they had like four innings apiece or three innings apiece. Like they had one inning apiece, and we had five or six guys drive out to Scottsdale and then drive back. Like it's hearing things like that is like really what makes rehab special, in my opinion. Like that's that camaraderie, that group culture that goes on. It's huge.
You guys have kind of touched about different points along the way. Do you think, in your opinion, the Tommy John rehab is more like time-based or goal-based, marker-based? Like, what is the ultimate determining factor for progressing guys?
So on our end, we are more time-based with everything, with how we roll with it. We have a pretty good set protocol from the surgeon down through the pitching and medical department as well, where everybody's on the same page. Like they all know what to expect out of each other. They all know what to expect out of the player when he's at, say he's at 60 feet this week, and next week he's doing two sets at 60 feet. Like we have normative data on everybody. Like somebody should be throwing, let's say they're at 75 feet. They should be throwing X miles per hour at 75 feet. And we all know it, and we all help govern it as well. So we are able to understand that based on where you're at on your timeline in rehab, this is where you're supposed to be for your throwing. And then for our lifting side, on the S&C side, we are more goal-based with it. You know, say, for example, if a guy, if one of the goals is he needs to get stronger and he hits a marker on a KPI, I don't just keep pushing him to, say, squat heavier. Like, say if he's, say, just totally arbitrary number here, say if the goal is for him to have a double body weight squat, you know, I'm not going to keep pushing him to have a 2.25 times body weight squat. Like, that's sort of missing the mark, in my opinion. Once you're strong enough, move on. Once you're powerful enough, move on. Like, go and start filling other buckets that aren't quite as full. So that's sort of how we run it.
Yeah, I think it's definitely a blended approach. I don't think this is something you can be all the way black and white on. In general, I really love using kind of like goal-based markers. I think they're a little more objective, and I like thinking about where does a guy need to get to. Like with a Tommy John, it's throwing. With a lower body injury, it's running. Like with an oblique injury, it's being able to rotate. Like think about what pattern is the most affected and work backwards to say, what does this guy need to do to be able to get back? And having objective markers of being like, all right, to do that, he needs to be able to do this, and to be able to do that, then he needs to be able to do this. As far as you can, working backwards, just using like the reductionist approach, using markers like that, I think are how I like guiding my rehabs. However, I think you still need time-based constraints, because you need to remember that certain tissues are only capable of healing at certain rates. So like you need to respect the healing capabilities of a tissue, and it doesn't matter if a guy might have the muscular strength to do something if like his UCL is not ready to do what you're asking it to do yet. So I think you need a blend of both, and I think you can't pick sides. I think you just need to know when to use which as a marker for the rehab.
Yeah, I think that's a really valuable point. And kind of what I was thinking along the lines with this question was just, I'm not sure that it is black and white. And I think there are different things, and maybe even guy to guy, I don't know. Does that depend? Some guys are more like, I need an end goal for, you know, the next 4 weeks versus I need a goal today, or like, some guys want to be educated more. Some guys just want to be told what to do and do it. Have you guys seen that as well?
For sure. There are a lot of guys out there who more so like they want to reach a goal in 4 weeks. Like whatever our goal is for that training block, like that's just something that they need in order to strive to get there, to sort of motivate themselves, for sure.
Yeah. And I believe on our first rehab podcast, I kind of brought these two up, but my first year in rehab, I had two guys going to Tommy John at very similar times, and they could not have been opposites. They had different surgeries. One was a rookie ball guy, one was a big leaguer with a couple years, one was a weight room workhorse. One guy needed to be pushed quite a bit. Just one guy was super tight, one guy was very lax, hypermobile, and their rehabs played out so differently throughout it. One, you needed to throw the brakes on. The other, you needed to hold his hand a little more and kind of push him to keep going. And they ran into different setbacks related to kind of different iterations of their personality throughout the rehab. And they could not have played out any more different. So each guy's unique. You need to appreciate the variables that make everyone different. And it's never going to go truly to the protocol for any one guy. And you just need to be flexible and ready to adjust based on what happens in real life.
Yeah, I feel like if you tell somebody, all right, in the next 4 weeks, I want you to accomplish this, some guys are like, no, I'll do that in two. And then some guys are like, I don't know if I can get all of that done in 4 weeks, you know, and then there's everybody in between. So it definitely takes a unique approach. And like I said, just seeing it from afar of just how many different personalities there are, even not in rehab, but just this good advice for just everybody in strength and conditioning, especially in pro ball, like the amount of personalities you're going to run into and just the different characteristics that make people tick. Like there's just so much uniqueness in everybody's path and their approach to training and the game and all of that, that I think it's just good to be able to adapt just your own personality so that you can get the most out of those guys. So how about plans for pitchers versus position players? Obviously the position player may not be as frequent with Tommy John. Does it matter what position they play that determines your path to success for them? Or is it more what protocol they end up getting?
I think the biggest thing it affects is the end. Generally the position player can come back, start swinging a little earlier and DH before their arm is ready. Which even if they're just at the complex, getting at bats and extended or towards the end, like when they're allowed to start a rehab stint, like being able to get at bats a little bit sooner than a pitcher would, getting his first in-game experience, I think is part of it. And then I think just the throwing progression is just a little more complex for a pitcher just because it's a little longer, especially if it's a starter, you got to build them up longer to get them back to where they were. A position player might be able to work a little bit more submaximally and still be able to play his position efficiently, where a pitcher truly kind of needs to get back to 100% to be effective at our level. So I think but in general, you know, they're the same human beings. It's the same rehab for the majority of it. I think there's just little nuances at the end that kind of affect the position player versus the pitcher.
Yeah, for sure. Like it's those little things at the end of it that sort of take everything into account. Like Ben said, like they're ready to play, they're ready to hit in a game, like as a DH way before they're able to actually play in the field. Like say, for example, if you have a right fielder, like he's going to be able to do live ABs probably a month or so before he can actually get in the game and let one rip from the outfield track to second base. Like that's, the hitting's just going to come back quicker. On the training side of things, not much is going to change, to be frank. Like there's the really only thing that position player will really need to hit on is a run progression, because there's going to be a good gap of time before they're even cleared to run, before they can get that full range, before they can get extension, flexion, all that without any problems. So in my experience, you're going to have to build them up on a run progression, and you might as well just take your time with it and do it right. You know, go all the way back to foundation with them, like reteach A skips, B skips, wall drills. If you like wall drills, like just take your time with it, do it right, because you will have enough time, in my opinion, to do a full run progression with a position player Tommy John rehab. So that's the big thing.
Something else unique that you just kind of triggered for me when you said the running progression thing. I think if a guy gets an allograft or an autograft, and if it's auto, whether it came from their hamstring or palmaris, like I've seen some of the hamstrings that, you know, some, they usually say treat it like a regular strain. I usually think it takes kind of a little bit longer.
Yeah.
from I only had a few of them when I was doing the rehab, but they were kind of complex, like hamstring strains. So it was almost like you had two separate injuries, and those are guys you need to, like, you're managing two separate parts of their rehab. Not just the upper body part, but also you need to put them through a running progression and build up strength on the side they took the graft from. So that's something that can't really be overlooked too, because that's a major piece when they take it from the hamstring.
Yeah. I had a mentor who told me when I was first coming up in strength conditioning that when you have a guy whose hamstring is now part of his elbow, like he had the graft from his hamstring, the way he did it is he approached the hamstring as if it was like a 2+ hamstring strain. Like that's sort of how much attention you got to give the hamstring on that side while you're going through training. So
that's a really valuable point. It's actually not something I had on the notes, but I'm glad you brought it up, Ben. Just anything else that you guys are really focusing on while also doing the Tommy John, like let's say, you know, the hamstring aside, like, are there other things that you're trying to hammer, like specifically the core, the posterior chain, just like, or is it all just like, hey, let's focus on the elbow first and then everything else will kind of fall into place?
For me, Chris, to be honest, I'm kind of reverse in that. Like, I want to focus on everything else before the elbow comes. That way we can sort of train the whole body, and then the elbow will sort of, you know, via the cross training effect, it'll almost take care of itself. Like, obviously you still need to address it and you still need to have attention to it. But if you get the legs right, you get the low back right, you get the healthy side stronger, like everything really in my experience, like it sort of falls into place. So as long as you're doing nothing reckless, like you obviously still need to have a good training plan together with proper progressive overload, like a lot of it will just fall into place and it'll work out pretty well.
Yeah, I think at the end of the day, it's like the saying, like training equals rehab, rehab equals training. I heard our current rehab guy, Jeff, the other day say, rehab really is just regular training, just working around restrictions. And at the end of the day, I truly believe that's kind of what it is. I think pushing the guy and trying to use that time to make them come back a better player than they were before the injury, and being able to do all the things that they're allowed to do is going to allow them to come back better. And one other weird nuance that when you were talking, asking us any other thoughts, Chris, is like something I really noticed with these guys is I'll try to pay a lot of attention to like the alignment of like their knuckles as they're doing different hangs or whether they're doing different rows or presses. And I noticed way before I could understand why with this group that they would do rows and they would just hold the dumbbell almost in like their pointer and middle finger and just kind of let the pinky go limp a little bit. And I just noticed a pattern over and over with like shoulder guys and like UCL guys, especially, like they all had this pattern, like they wanted to hold the dumbbell more in their top two fingers. And kind of educating these guys on, you need to train the whole hand because the muscles associated with your pinky or your index finger are going to go all the way down. And those are the same muscles that dynamically stabilize your elbow and give you strength so that your UCL doesn't have to work as hard. And I think that's something that I've always thought that I used to think I was crazy for, that I think is now catching on in the field a little more. But something that I always pay attention to with rehab guys is, because the more you start bleeding through your hand when you're hanging or holding a weight, the more it's going all the way up the chain and affecting something with your elbow, your shoulder, your scap, all the way down. So that's just a weird thing I picked up through the years, but I definitely believe to be true.
That's awesome right there. That's amazing.
Yeah, I can remember you randomly came up to me. I don't know if I was benching or rowing or something, and you're like awkwardly looking at my pinky, and you're like, I was like, what are you doing? I got this weird theory, dude. And I was like, all right, run me through it. And that was years and years and years ago.
I don't remember that.
When you were still doing the rehab stuff. And I was like, you might be onto something. I don't know. You run with that if you want. So, okay. So how about Ben, maybe Ben specifically, but just in general, you're at the affiliate now. So obviously most Tommy John guys are either going to be with the big league club at their, you know, their given place, or down at the complex in spring training where you're at the affiliate, you're not going to be doing a long-term Tommy John rehab the whole time at your affiliate. So when a guy comes to you, Ben, and he's in his progression, like, how does your approach change? Are you just strictly going off whatever the protocol is that's sent to you? Are you still like making adjustments based on what you see? And again, some of that is you have the previous rehab experience to kind of help guide you through that. But just what's your experience like working with a Tommy John rehab guy at an affiliate versus down at the complex? And John, also feel free to chime in here. I know you have affiliate experience as well. So
yeah, I think we have great strength coaches, great ATs and PTs here. So in general, I usually don't feel a need to really question anything they're doing. So when I get the procedure, whether it's from a guy coming down from the big leagues to do his rehab, or if it's a guy coming back from Fort Myers to get back into games, in general, like whatever they give me is that's my plan. That's what I'm going to do. But at the same time, I think what I learned from 2016 to 18 and when I was doing ATPT internships before I was in baseball, I think those are skills that I still have, and they give me eyes to pick up on things that whether others miss or they just can't see because they're not working with the guy anymore. I think that's a valuable thing to have so that I can bring up points, circle back to whether it's you guys in the big leagues, them in Fort Myers, my rehab team in Worcester, and be able to say, hey, this is what I'm seeing with this guy. And then we can make necessary adjustments to the original plan and kind of make a hybrid collaborative plan that gives the player the best plan possible to come back.
Yeah, and to touch on that, here in Arizona, when guys, they start their live BPs and their game progressions here before they get sent to their affiliates, what I try to do, I'll usually know what affiliate they're going to beforehand, and I'll shoot a text to the strength coach there, and I'll say, hey, like, this is what so-and-so is doing. It's on Team Builder, so you can have a look for it. I'll shoot them that text a week or two in advance just to sort of put it on their radar. And then really, when they start their live progression, live BP in games, I'll start getting them more on the affiliate sort of lifting plan that we have. For us, that's just sort of our template that we use across the organization. I'll start to get him off of our rehab sort of template that we use, and it'll start being more affiliate like. So that's just an easier way that we've had success with in order to make that transition for the player easier. Because if it's a hard transition for the player, it's not going to be a good transition. So,
yeah, I think that's a super valuable point, because I think to do the rehab job well, you got to be off the reservation a little bit, especially early on in the rehab when a guy has really unique mobility or stability needs. And you're going to have to give them like very special drills kind of devised for them to be able to relearn some sort of lost pattern. But I think the goal when you're in the rehab position is by the end of it, making sure by the ending phases of that, they are back on a program that looks like what they're expected to do once they go back to the affiliate. Cause I think that prepares the player for what he's about to do. And I think that makes it easier for the coach receiving him that it's like, all right, like we might have to do this one weird exercise, but other than that, like he's back in line with all the other players, and it doesn't become this unique unicorn that like he has training wheels on for the rest of his career. Like he can understand that he's a normal guy again and that he's ready to go. He's back. So I think that's a very important transition portion of the rehab.
No doubt. That goes for conditioning too, now that I'm thinking about it, because that a lot of times that's also sort of that can be an issue with transition back, you know, because guys aren't used to, maybe they're not used to running 4, 5, 6 days a week. I'm not sure how each organization does it, but as the rehab team, you also need to make sure that the player is going to be ready for all that running volume, the intensity, whatever they're doing at the affiliate, they need to start doing that before they're at the affiliate. So
yeah, when I was in rehab, I used to think if the guy can sweat again and a guy can do a normal arm swing once he has enough range of motion to do that, like for me it was like, this is a time to get better. Like I thought those guys should be doing more than what was being done at the affiliate, so that when they go back to pitching in games, like their running volume's actually coming down, and wherever I send them to, whatever they're doing for conditioning at that affiliate, it should be cake. Like yeah. these guys, they can't play baseball. Like they go in, they're on a table, and then they come see you. And for a lot of them, that's their day. And then they have hours to either sit there and watch Netflix, or like they don't really know what to do with the rest of the time. So the more you can get a training effect and push them within their normal working volume, I think the better off the player is going to be when he comes back.
Hell yeah.
So one of the things that's kind of associated with Tommy John is like, oh, I'm going to get Tommy John and I'm going to come back and throw harder. Right. And it's like, everybody just thinks that. And it's to the point where I think I read something that just the amount of Tommy Johns, especially in the youth, has really, really spiked over the years. And I don't know if it's like a miseducation of like, if I get the surgery, I automatically throw harder or what it is, but what is like the success rate of that, that you guys have seen personally? Like, are there any times where the Tommy John rehab actually didn't go well for a guy? And you don't have to use names or anything like that. And then ultimately the guys that do have the most success, like what are the keys that you've seen from them throughout their rehab process that made them successful in the long run?
So I think it's, that's kind of a, there's a few parts to unload in this. I have seen the guy that the big leaguer that comes back and he's not quite the same and kind of needs to reinvent himself. Chris, I'm sure you know who I'm talking about, had go down battle in the minor leagues for a few years and then kind of reinvent himself as a new pitcher, come back and maybe a little different arsenal, maybe didn't throw as hard as he used to, but like found a way back to the major leagues. I think the other group, it's definitely true. There's a major cluster of guys, especially younger ones, that get the surgery, come back, and they're throwing 2 to 8 miles per hour harder than they were. And it's like, this must be because of the surgery. But I think if you look at a lot of those, you know, there might be unique responders to the surgery. It might be they never had a training age and then they had to work for the first time when they had the surgery. Or it might be a younger kid who's just still maturing and still developing. And that might be the miles per hour he would have gained anyway, just from being a late teenager, like young adult, like going through puberty and kind of like just growing up. So I think a lot of the responders are guys either that had a low training age and got put on a lifting program or a shoulder program for the first time, or just really young kids that are just grown up.
Yeah, for sure. I agree with that 100%. Like we've all seen where guys gain 1, 2, 3 miles an hour, like guys who have training age or full grown man. Like we've seen that, like that's not uncommon. Where I think that sort of where everybody thinks like, oh, I'm going to get TJ and that's going to be great because I'm going to start throwing a lot harder, like 5, 6 miles an hour. Those cases to me, like you're saying, Ben, they happen because you have this huge chunk of time where somebody's actually able to take care of their body for the first time in their career. Because even a lot of these kids, especially in Latin America, like they play baseball year round. From the age of like, I don't know, 9, 10. I know for me, I was playing baseball year round by the time I was 13. And I mean, there's no time when you're doing that to take care of your body. Like you have 3, 4, 5 games in a weekend and you have another game on Tuesday or Wednesday that week. Like you have school you got to do. You have, you know, your other like family commitments, probably maybe even another sport. Like you don't have time to go and lift and learn about nutrition and get your 8 hours of sleep. You know, that's not something that's really on the radar until you get into rehab, until you have the game taken away from you. So I think that's a large chunk of it, is that people are actually able to take a step back from playing and they can then focus on their body. They're able to focus on, do I need to gain muscle? You know, guys who gain 20 pounds, they're probably going to be able to throw harder. Guys who need to get stronger, if they get stronger, probably going to start throwing harder if they need to get more explosive. All three of those things will lead to velocity. It's just a matter of now, it's not because of the elbow surgery that you did this. It's because you're able to take care of your body because your elbow got hurt. So that's sort of my 2 cents on it. It's more like they were just able to take care of their body for the first time in their life. They had a big chunk of time and they got after it.
Yeah, I would say that's the biggest misconception, right? Especially with younger players or parents of youth players. Just those kids are always playing. They're never really training. And they just see, you know, the big league guy that gets surgery and then he comes back 8, 10, 12, 16 months later and all of a sudden he's throwing harder or he looks better physically. And they don't understand how much training goes into it, right? And like, it's kind of similar to an offseason, right? Like the amount of baseball activity is so minimal in the offseason for guys that they should really be pushing that work capacity very, very high so that when they get to the season, their ability to just, you know, maintain and tolerate the amount of workload and the games and things like that, they should be able to handle that. And I think that's a really big part of those long-term rehabs. And again, I think sometimes that could probably get lost in the shuffle of the day-to-day of like, you know, the guy's 4 or 5 months in and he doesn't necessarily see the light at the end of the tunnel. And, you know, he doesn't see the point of training legs heavy that day because he's going to be really sore the next day or whatever. And like being able to have those conversations with those guys and like help them understand the long-term process, I think is really valuable. One thing, John, that you brought up briefly there was nutrition. And, you know, talking with our nutritionist in Boston, and he's working on like setting protocols that associate with different rehab processes. Is there anything specifically that either you or your nutritionist is mixing in with these guys as they go through the phases of their Tommy John progression?
I know that in the past what we've done is we've had sort of a packet that goes home with the players. Our nutritionist done a great job with, she'll lay out all this information for them. She'll give them the supplements. She'll say, you need to take this supplement twice a day, 2 weeks after your surgery. After those 2 weeks, stop it. You know, that's just an arbitrary example right there. But she did a great job with that. I keep our nutritionist in the loop on everything as well. I send out a weekly report, just sort of like where guys are at, like here's their goal. It's more detailed than this, but it lists in there their main goal for rehab. Say if a guy needs to gain 20 pounds, so he needs a hypertrophy block that he's gotten his lifting. We need the nutrition goals to match up with that. And our nutritionist, she's done a great job of reaching out to those players individually. And she just knocks it out of the park with helping these guys reach the goals that they need for rehab. And it is very individualized as well. Because there's, as we've all seen, there's not really anybody who, when they come into rehab, they're good. You know, it's like, just leave that guy alone. There's almost always something they can work on, whether it's body composition, gain weight. I mean, really, there's limitless options. So,
Benny, anything from your days in rehab, just working with nutritionists?
No, I think John hit it on the head. I did have something still rolling around in my head from the previous question, just about like about guys coming back stronger and better than they were. I think sometimes it can be really pronounced because if a guy comes back throwing a lot harder, a lot better, like he's going to make news or he's going to be like the talk of your area. And it's going to be like, well, this guy had the surgery, he came back better. But I don't think you can discount survivorship bias either. And you got to remember all the guys that come back worse or don't make it back, like they kind of just fade away, disappear, and they disappear from the sample size, if that makes sense. So I think that's something that can't really be discounted, is we're at a point where the odds of coming back from a Tommy John are relatively good compared to a lot of other surgeries, but there are guys that don't make it back. So, you know, just not pinpointing just the guy that high school kid that jumped from 92 to 98 that all of a sudden made himself into a prospect versus the guy you never heard about again because he got the surgery and he never made it to your TV. Like, two very different things.
Yeah, and that was kind of why I asked the question, is just everybody always points to the success stories and kind of just forgets that, like, you know, no surgery is 100% guaranteed to bring you back and be as good as you were or better than you were. And there are guys that, you know, go under the knife and they just don't come back the same. And like you said, Ben, sometimes they're able to reinvent themselves and still make that journey back to the big leagues and find different ways to do it. But there are guys that just unfortunately don't always come back. And I think there's probably learning opportunities in those as well as the success stories. And you know, being able to audit your process and kind of go through what went well, what didn't, and just, you know, look at it in an objective lens and just understand that, you know, learning from that is going to help you with the next Tommy Johns, I think is really relevant. But guys, we've covered a lot here, you know, from the start of the process all the way through to the end when they get back into the game, some side notes on mental skills and nutrition. Before I let you go, just is there anything else that we need to cover, you know, in regards to Tommy John or just rehab in general?
One of John's answers, he kind of brought up like the guys that come back good, like they're getting really good sleep for the first time. They're not worried about having a game the next day. So they push themselves more, get a little more sore, get better training effects, come back better players. Something like there is a dark side to rehab too. And I think there's guys that really don't respond to losing their passion or losing baseball. And there's a group of guys that they're going to have time on their hands that they've never had before. And they're not going to have the incentive reward or the obstacle of like playing the next day so they don't go out. So there's a group of guys you might see like kind of spin off the rails a little bit. They might start going out a lot more and like they might run into the roadblocks because of their rehab, because of that. It'll affect their focus, their recovery, everything that goes into their day, their work ethic. And like, those are cases where you really need to get mental skills involved too. Because if you can't dangle the carrot in front of them, well enough, and you know, you got to be able to know when they're veering off, and it's usually things that they're doing that you can't see face to face that are going to affect the outcome of their rehab. So I think that's kind of something you can't really discount from this either.
Yeah, good point, Ben.
Anything else from you, John?
No, sir.
Yeah, guys, I think we really hammered it. I took a ton of notes here, and you know, like I said earlier on in the episode here, the first rehab one was really well received, a lot of good feedback, and obviously a ton of just, you know, listeners tuning into it. And I think this one lived up to the hype. So I'm glad that we finally were able to do it. I appreciate your times. I know we're in different time zones and doing different things and on different schedules, and being able to finally get this one down and you know, just listen to you guys. And I can tell you're very passionate, very knowledgeable about the rehab stuff. I appreciate it, you know, from my own selfish viewpoint, just being able to learn from you guys and having you in my corner. And, you know, in the meantime, stay safe. Good luck this year. And I'll talk to you guys both soon.
Thanks, Chris. Sure.
Thank you.
All right, everybody, that's going to conclude part two of this two-part episode with John and Ben. I hope you were able to enjoy both parts of the episode. I think both have a ton of really good information. And like I said in the first one, the original rehab podcast with these two was really well received. So if you haven't listened to that one, I would recommend checking that one out as well. Three things that I took from the guys in this episode: understanding the intricacies of an individual will help you to progress their rehab process appropriately. Don't ignore conditioning and speed work while progressing through a Tommy John rehab. And Tommy John rehab allows you a big chunk of time to take care of your whole body. Use it wisely. With that being said, I hope you enjoyed this episode, and we'll talk to you again on the next one.